When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Before we get started with today's episode, we have some exciting news.
Yes, we do. We have been nominated for a British Podcast Award.
I'm so excited.
Me too. We're up for the Best New Podcast category. Because although it feels like we've been doing this forever, Jess, we actually haven't.
It feels so natural and so much fun to do this every week. And we're so excited that everybody tunes in and listens and watches on YouTube. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, if you weren't watching and listening, then something like this wouldn't happen. They look and they see whether people are engaging with what we do or we're just sort of wittering into the darkness. And they see, yes, people are, and they're enjoying it, hopefully. And we get a little nomination like this and we get to put on a frock on a Thursday night.
We are a team of three over here. It's not just the two of us. Martin Williams is our editor and he wrote and performed our theme song. And he's just a wonderful part of this and it wouldn't happen without him at all. So thank you so much, Martin.
Enormous thanks to Martin. And if you want to give us another reason to thank you, there is a Listener's Choice Award. All you have to do is click on the link that we'll provide in the description of this podcast/video. Click on there, search for Words Unraveled and vote for us. And, you know, it just gives us a chance at another award.
Two categories. Excellent.
On with the show, though, and back to our episode of Monetary Etymology.
An episode of our award-nominated podcast, Words Unraveled.
What's so sterling about the British pound?
Why does the dollar sign look like that?
And what is the true meaning of money?
Join us to be penny wise and pound also wise, because we'll take a globe-trotting look at coinages of all denominations on this episode of Words Unraveled.
Welcome to another Words Unraveled. I'm Rob Watts from the YouTube channel Rob Words.
And I'm Jess Safaris, author of the upcoming book, Useless Etymology. And today we are getting a sense for dollars and cents and pounds and yens and guineas, aren't we?
Yes, we are. We're going to be exploring the origins of all manner of currency. So you can separate your rupee from your rand and your ruble. But we're going to be talking more broadly about, yeah, financial terms and not too like sort of geeky financial, more like, you know, the stuff you hold in your hand. The money, the moolah, the spondulics, the wonga. We'll get into some of those kinds of terms as well.
Welcome to Words Invested.
Oh, yeah.
Today we are your finance bros.
Bro, I've never been called a bro before. Okay, Jess, let's start, as we often do, with the word that is our theme and where it comes from.
Money.
Yes, money. Where does the word money come from?
Okay. So this word existed in Old English, and we have relatives in Old French, but ultimately it's from the Latin moneta, meaning a place for coining money, a mint. But it has this wild history behind it because there's nothing inherent in the word that implies cash or money or anything. It's because it is from moneta, which was a title or an epithet for the Roman goddess Juno. And there was a temple to Juno on the Capitoline Hill where money was coined and precious metals were stored. So it probably means something like to advise or to admonish. In fact, it's related to the word admonish as well as all of our words for thinking like mental and memory and amnesia and mantis.
Wow. So there's money in admonishment and in mentality.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Also, there's thinking and prudence hidden within money itself.
I see.
Whether you use it wisely or not.
And so Moneta, the name of this goddess, well, I say a name of a goddess, the goddess is Juno, right? It's the same, one and the same. We get that word from the fact that at their temple, you've got this money being produced or being...
Minted.
There we go. Yeah. It's exactly the same origin. The word mint comes from moneta.
The Old English predecessor to the word mint was also used to mean coin or coinage or money, because the word coin didn't exist in Old English yet.
Yeah, so you've got this one word that means both of those things in Old English, and then hooray, here come the Normans, and they bring their version of the same word, which is monnaie, or in modern French is also monnaie, but it's spelled slightly differently, and that gives us a different word for us to use for money, for to mint, but things that are minted are money, so, you know, it's a bit messy still.
In my mind, a mint nowadays kind of implies the motion of minting a coin. It has that sort of tactile feel, even if it doesn't have that literal sense. But the word coin actually has that literal sense, right?
Yeah, so tell us more about the etymology of coin itself.
It's from the Latin cuneus, meaning corner. When it first arose in English, this is like 14th century, it meant wedge, but it also adopted the sense of something stamped or a piece of money after the dies used for stamping metal, which functioned like a wedge and in some cases were shaped like one. It's basically just implying something stamped or a piece of metal stamped.
You know, this is something that is going to come up again and again during this episode is you know, a word, it just means stamped.
Cha-ching.
Or it just means round. Or it just means piece of thing. And a lot of monetary words are really, really vague. They're just in different languages. So we end up with absolutely loads of them.
How about some examples of those?
Oh, of currency?
Yeah.
Yes, please. I've got a whole list of them here. Do we start with the greenback, with the Yankee dollar?
I mean, dollar is also not just the United States. Like, we've got Australian dollars and Brunei dollars and Canadian dollars and Eastern Caribbean dollars and Hong Kong dollars.
Yes, yeah. Indeed. But they all have the same origin. Mm-hmm. And that is not in the United States by any means.
No.
It is in a Bohemian valley.
It's crazy that this word came from Joachim's Valley, right?
Yeah. So it's Joachimsthal, right? It's the place, Joachimsthal. But if you are from there, you are a Joachimsthaler, right? And coins that were produced from the silver mines in that valley became known as Joachimsthalers, but then they dropped the Joachim just for expediency. And that word Thaler, which by the way still exists in Germany, weirdly, my little Keats here, Keats means a neighborhood here in Berlin, you can get, or if you're like elderly or whatever, they have a special scheme where you get tokens, and those tokens are called Thaler, right? Which is the same word. But anyway, dollar is just an anglicization of the word Thaler.
This is like the most dramatic re-bracketing we have in English, right?
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah. And it's kind of messy, but that's how we get it. And I believe the American dollar is ultimately named after the Spanish dollar.
We've talked about this before, but we can go into it again. Is the piece of eight, or the Spanish dollar, the real de ocho? I'm bad at pronouncing Spanish. The English picked up dollar via Low German, which was well before the U.S. Existed, but the American dollar was later named after the Spanish dollar.
We should talk about the dollar sign as well. But I wonder, do we do that now, or do we get into some monetary symbols a little bit later on?
Yeah, let's address that in a moment. Let's keep going with the names.
So what are the ones that we got? Well, we've got the pound, which sounds like a weight, and yeah, that is what it is. It's a pound of silver originally. The pound sign, I'm already ruining this, having said we were going to do what the symbols are later, but it is an L, and it's relevant that the pound sign is an L because it's from Libra, or Libra Pondo. So Libra, we know as the scales, right? As the star sign. Libra is Latin for a weight. So Libra Pondo is a pound weight.
Question here on pound. It was originally 1 pound weight of silver, which was, 240 pence. Why sterling?
This is a really good question. So we do call it the pound sterling, and it's a nice way that we like to differentiate the pound from other pounds that might exist. There are a couple of theories where the word sterling comes from in this case. One of them is that there was a Norman coin that had a star on it. And so it is a starling, a little star.
Ah.
Could be that. Another one is that it's from a coin that had birds on it, right?
Uh-huh, that birds, makes sense, like a starling.
The starlings. We don't know which of those it is. It seems more likely to be that it's related to the first one, the idea of a star, because if it was related to the idea of the birds, then it would be spelt S-T-A-R more likely than S-T-E-R. And that's not just my reasoning. That is the reasoning that etymologists have come to. So, yeah. It's likely that that's where sterling comes from.
Is that the logic behind like every kind of sterling silver?
Yeah, so I guess it must be, right? We talk about sterling silver, pound directly relates to a certain weight of silver. I couldn't find anything that suggested that wasn't where the link is. But you know, it's not obviously not the only currency that refers to weight. In the Americas, you have an awful lot of pesos.
Sure, yeah,
around the place. The peso, which literally means peso, is weight. So it's peso de oro or peso de plata, which is a weight of gold, a weight of silver as well. And funnily enough, the peso was also a term for the Spanish dollar. And again, that is going to come up when we talk about where the dollar sign comes from.
Which, I mean, maybe we should just do this since part of the, one of the theories has to do with the shape of that PS symbol, yep. Right? And I said earlier, the American dollar is named after the Spanish dollar. It's not, it was the coin idea was adopted from it, but not the word. The benefit of the Spanish dollar, which was first minted in 1497, was that it was trusted for a very consistent silver content and could reliably be divided into 8 bits, hence that pieces of eight element. And now one of the theories for the dollar sign, the more credible theory out there, though some of them are unsatisfying no matter what.
They're all rubbish. I don't like any of them, Jess. We need to find another theory for where the dollar came from.
All right. Well, this theory, should you choose to accept it, is that it is abbreviating pesos as PS and then gradually superimposing the S over the P. And a key figure here was Oliver Pollock, who was a merchant who helped finance the American Revolution from Spanish New Orleans. And he merged PS, supposedly, in ledgers from around 1778. And then this was adopted by financier Robert Morris, who officially began to use it in U.S. correspondence. That's the more credible theory. And I can see, okay, so the reason I will lend this one credence is because I have seen the many shapes ampersands can take and the closeness with which they are to the original Latin elision of ET.
It's clearly the best theory, the most likely theory, but let's just state the obvious, that the dollar sign does not look like a P on top of an S.
Right.
If you look down in the bottom right-hand corner, you can kind of see a P because the line extends down. But otherwise, it's an S with a line through it. So can we explain that, please?
It looks more like a musical symbol than anything else. The other big theory that you'll see quoted frequently, which probably is not true, is that the design of, I believe it was the Spanish peso, had the pillars of Hercules wrapped in scrolls with a globe, which symbolized Spain's reach across the old and new worlds. And some have suggested this imagery inspired the dollar sign with the pillars forming the vertical lines and the scroll an S, but like...
It's not a horrible theory.
That one actually looks like what it's talking about,
yes.
But...
So the pillars of Hercules are what the Greeks called the entrance to the Strait of Gibraltar. So the bit where you pass between Africa and Europe into the Mediterranean with the pillars of Hercules, and they're a symbol of Spain. And either you see them sometimes, wrapped in a scroll maybe or a ribbon. So you can kind of see how, maybe it's that, maybe it's that.
I'm not sure why that one's considered unreliable, but I'm pretty sure it's chronology is the problem.
That makes sense. One that I quite like is the idea that, so we go back to the Bohemian thaler that gave us the word dollar. Mm-hmm. Well, some of the original Bohemian thalers, the Joachim's thaler, did feature a serpent on a cross. Now, if you can imagine a serpent wrapped around a cross, you can see how you get something a bit like an S shape with a line through it. So I think I quite like that idea. But again, people are sort of, you can see how people are just sort of grasping for any story from anywhere that could kind of explain this one.
There's another one that says like the U in the US moved over the like this one has.
I hate this. So Ayn Rand in Atlas Shrugged, one of the characters in that, says that, yeah, so this is specifically the dollar sign with two lines through it, that the two lines are somehow a squashed U. But in what world would you write a U without joining up those two verticals? I don't know.
That one also chronologically doesn't make any sense because like people weren't referring to the US as such at the time. Like
no, the sign predates the 1770s. So, yeah, it wasn't called the United States even then. So, what do we conclude here? We don't really know where the dollar sign came from.
Yeah, right.
No one does. We did manage to explain the pound sign accurately, though, which is this L for Libra Pondo. The euro sign as well, nice and easy. That's the Greek character epsilon, but they stick an extra line through it. Why do they do that? I think it's supposed to. So they say it's to represent stability, but I think it's just to make it look like
I think it looks more like money
sign.
That way.
I think so. Another interesting one is the rupee sign, which people might not immediately be able to call to mind, but what it looks like is a capital R without the vertical line, and then with another horizontal line that's just intersecting the round bit, right? And that has only been in existence since 2010. Surprisingly new. Yeah, absolutely. And it's the result of, I would say a competition, but they garnered suggestions from ordinary Indians in India, the Indian government did. And this is the design that they settled on. And they explain it as it being a Devanagari letter representing Ra, crossed over with a Latin R without the vertical line. And then these two lines, it says, represent A, the Indian flag, and B, I don't know why I'm representing letters with my fingers here. Podcast listeners, apologies. A, they represent the Indian flag, and B, it represents the equals sign for an equal society. I smell bull, but whatever. It's a surprisingly new sign.
We do seem to have a habit of retconning our currency lore.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's because they've become important national symbols.
Right.
As well as anything else.
So we have to give them feeling.
Yeah, it's true. You know, there was so much faff when it came to coming up with the European single currency around what to call it, as you might imagine, because Europe is so brimming with different languages and varied cultures who don't necessarily share an awful lot in common. And so the original idea for the euro was to call it the ECU, E-C-U, which is the acronym for the European Currency Union. But the problem with that was there's an old French coin called an ECU. And so they're like, oh, that's
oh no, that's we made it too then. Specific.
Yeah. So what are we going to call the euro? And they decided all of this in 1995. There were various suggestions. The Brits suggested the florin because at various times lots of European cultures have had a florin. Interesting to know that the Brits did not adopt the euro, so what they think doesn't really matter. What we thought.
Not much weight or pounds behind that opinion.
Very good. Other suggestions were the ducat and the couron, because actually there remain lots of European currencies that mean crown, which I'm sure I will mention a little bit. I mean, krona,
Swedish and Norwegian.
Yeah, exactly. So to call it the kuron, English currency, the British currency had a crown as well. And, you know, often there's a picture of someone wearing a crown on a coin. That's why. But no, they went with euro. The credit for the idea has often gone to a Belgian Esperantist.
Huh.
Yeah, called Germain Pirlo. But the Italian Federalist Movement suggested the name in the 1960s, so what, 30 years before this Esperanto enthusiast did. So, you know, the idea was clearly floating around. The French didn't like it. They said euro was maladroit. It was clumsy, maladroit. And the Germans didn't like using the word euro as a noun. They wanted to use it as a prefix. So they wanted the Germans to use the euro mark, the French to use the euro franc, the Italians to use the euro lira. Anyway, eventually, they did settle on just calling it the euro.
It is amazing that any consensus was achieved whatsoever.
I've discussed with friends here the fact that there is no nickname for the euro. If I want to talk about, in a casual way, I have to say quid. Or if I want to make the most of my international crowd, I might say bucks. I feel terribly clever saying bucks. But there isn't one, right? The Germans, for a time, used to call it the Euro Teuro. Teuer is the German for expensive, because
that is not a nickname. I mean, it is a nickname, but it's too many syllables.
It's not a nickname. And the problem with coming up with a nickname is it's equally difficult to find a universal term. Basically, the only thing that I could think of that European countries have in common is the fact that they're in Europe, and they all call Europe something a bit like Europe. So that's how you end up with euro. But it's they solved it by having this one word. But there is no nickname for the euro. So I would encourage people to leave their suggestions in the comments.
One entertaining thing about the United States and its hyper-capitalized society is how many words we have for money. Like you mentioned, bucks, but we've also got clams, bones, greenbacks, beans, Benjamins, cabbage, you know, moolah, dough, bankroll.
Cabbage.
Bread, cheddar, big ones, dead presidents, bacon.
Oh, we've got a lot of these. I found some as well. We've got Wildewall, which means money, spanker, gory, mopus, ribbon, needful, which I like.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry,
I haven't got quite enough needful for that. Steven, kelter, dibs, pewter, mint sauce, which I think is quite a cute one. Nobbins, coins collected. Actually, that specifically refers to money that's collected by an entertainer after they've performed. They're called nobbins. I really like that term. Spondulix was coined in the US in the 1800s.
That's a very nice word.
Yeah, but apparently it's just sort of arbitrary. Just someone just came up with what sounded like a funny word for money and used it, which is really annoying. Wonga has an actual proper interesting etymology. It's from the Romany word for money or for coal as well, which tells you a bit about the historical value of coal, doesn't it? Which was wonga, so it's wonga with an R at the end of it. Bees and honey, Cockney rhyming slang for money. There's a lot of these. Oh, here's another good one. Oofdish. Have you ever heard oofdish?
Oofdish. That sounds like something you would say in the Midwest when you stub your toe or flush your water on the floor.
Yeah, it does sound like that. It's an American coinage, so far as the English language is concerned, because it's from Yiddish, right? And so often Yiddish words tend to enter English in the New York area, there or thereabouts. And it's from the Yiddish Affentisch, right, which Germans will recognize as sounding quite a lot like their phrase auf den Tisch, which means on the table. So it refers to money on the table. Ufdisch, which I like. Yeah, that's all the ones I've got for you.
Excellent. Well, that was a delight.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Should we talk about, I think one of the more universal pieces of currency would probably be the penny, right? Not universal, but it occurs in many places.
Yeah, we've got it. You've got it. Where does it come from?
It has meant that for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
The first true pennies were minted in the late 8th century and were inspired by Carolingian silver coinage. And they were these light, wide silver coins. They were one 240th of a Saxon pound, and each one weighed exactly 1.46 grams.
And it's a thoroughly Germanic word, is penny. It seems like it's a word with a suffix at the end of it. So you've got that E at the end of it, and it's pfennig, and you've got, you know, ing at the end of a lot of the Germanic words that are equivalent to penny. So, you know, where does the pen bit come from? And one of them is something that we've talked about before, which is that it might be related to the German word Pfand, or other Germanic languages have the word Pfand or Pant, which you find on cans that you return, or bottles that you return, as a deposit scheme. You know, you get money back. But we also discussed how that word is related to the word pawn as well. So it may be that a penny is actually a pawning, which is kind of cool.
That's very cool. I like that a lot.
Yeah, but again, no one's quite sure, because it's just one of those words that goes back
right,
so far.
It's meant,
and there's no
penny
obvious
so birth. Long, right?
Yeah, it's just meant what it means for so long. Sometimes words just mean what they mean.
But it does have that ending in basically every Germanic language that it's related to. So that tracks. That's
yeah,
very
it really
cool.
does. Yeah, I like that one. Mm-hmm. At this point, can I bring your attention to the utter insanity of British pre-decimal currency?
Well,
which does not sound that exciting.
Because like the decimal currency was like surprisingly late, like 18th century, right?
No, we didn't decimalize until 1971 in Britain. Yeah,
all
seriously.
Right, well,
my parents grew up with this mad system of currency that was based around a pound being 20 shillings or 240 pence. A pound was 240 pence.
We've been talking about this, like 240 is like segments of 240. It goes back to the 12 base or base 12 counting system, right?
Yeah, it's sexagesimal, or what's the other one, duodecimal. As a result of its easy divisibility, they needed lots of terms for the various different divisions of it. They couldn't just call it a quarter or an eighth or whatever like that. So let me just tell you, starting from smallest to biggest, these are all genuine denominations that were used in Britain before 1971. So we only got rid of them half a century ago. So to start with, you had 2 farthings to a halfpenny. Obviously, you had 2 halfpennies, half pennies, to a penny. You had 12 pennies to a shilling, and 3 pennies to a threepenny bit, obviously. 2 threepenny bits in a sixpence, 2 sixpences in a shilling, 5 shillings in a crown, of course, and then you've got 2 crowns in a 10-shilling note, as makes perfect sense. 2 10-shilling notes are in a pound note, because a pound is 20 shillings. But of course, you could also have 2 shillings to a florin, 10 florins to a pound, and 2 half crowns to a crown.
I had a cheat sheet on this in high school when we were reading various books.
They never attempted to teach me this at school.
What?
It was so preposterous. The closest we got was a performance of half a sixpence as the school play.
It comes up so frequently in literature. It's nice to at least be like, okay, all right.
Yeah, I suppose it is, but I've had it explained to me a million times. And even though I've just read all of those out to you, they haven't stayed in. 240 pence to the pound. But people got by and it worked. But I don't think anyone would choose to go back to it.
I can't imagine so.
Yeah, and shilling's another very old word, actually. It perhaps goes back to the same root as words like scale, shale, shell, words that mean sort of fragmented or cut up. The bizarre thing we did in Britain, by the way, was to opt for the plural of pence more over pennies. We don't really talk about pennies. And we even use that with 1 pence, which is barking and, you know, grammatically backward.
But it's the same source, right?
Yeah.
Etymologically.
Pennies and pence mean the same thing.
It dovetails nicely in the sense that it rhymes with cents, right? Which the origin of that is pretty obvious. It's 1/100th of a dollar. But the cent was born in like 1793, I'm checking here. We had the chain cent, which was like a copper coin that no one liked or used. And it wouldn't be called a penny until about 1889, which borrowed the notion of 1/100th of a dollar, based on the idea of, because the word cent is from the Latin centum, meaning 100, but it didn't mean 1/100th of a thing until we sort of connected to the notion of percent, like per 100.
When we do that, we are saying per 100 every mm-hmm. time. Like, per mille is another thing you can say, which is per 1,000. People don't say it very often, but per mille is another thing. Where have you ever seen how that's notated? It's with, you know, how a percent is actually a tiny zero, a slash with a tiny zero at the bottom, but you add an extra tiny zero for per mille.
I think I have seen that. That's cool. Yeah, I didn't make the connection though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not used all that commonly. But you got into other sort of types of coin, and I'll drag us back to currency, which is something we're going to talk about, some world currencies. Because I mentioned that a few of them are named just after weight, like the peso, which we also talked about, the shekel as well. Shekel is just Hebrew for weight as well, which I think is really quite interesting. And then you've got other things like ruble means to cut. And originally a ruble was a denomination of another currency called a hryvnia, which sounds an awful lot like the current Ukrainian currency, which is the hryvnia, which means neck. Do you know why it means neck?
Is it the shape?
No, it's because, right? So have you ever seen coins with holes in them?
Yeah.
The old like Spanish peseta, which means little weight, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Well, so you could wear them around your neck on a string.
Oh, hey, that's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. Mm-hmm. And this goes right back to the Kievan Rus of the 11th century, the hryvnia does.
That gives the same kind of energy as like wearing your wealth in jewels.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. It's
just a little shadier.
Yeah. Well, it's also just a very sort of, someone's really got to get to you if they're going to get something off your neck, aren't they, as well? Drachma. You were going to tell us a bit about drachma.
I was. Okay, so among the first standardized silver coins were obols and drachmas, which emerged in like Athens and a number of other Greek locations. Obol is from the Greek obelos, meaning spit or nail, but is also related to the word obelisk. It originated as a metal rod used for trade, with six obols making up a drachma, which means a handful. And it's also related to like the Moroccan currency dirham. These were sort of a shift from barter to this like measured unit of exchange.
And actually it's linked to an English word as well that's worth a mention. I don't know if you've ever been offered a whiskey and been offered a wee dram.
Oh, a dram, yeah.
That comes mm-hmm. from the same source. Because actually the Armenian currency, which is the dram, is essentially the drachma as well.
A dram for a dram.
Yeah, I it's one of those words, dram, you would never trace back to Greek, logically, I don't think, when you're in the Scottish Highlands.
I don't know if we briefly want to address the fact that like Korean, Japanese, and Chinese currencies basically all mean like round coin. They talk about the shape.
That's right. So yen is Japan. Won is the Koreas, both of them. And then you've also got the yuan renminbi, which is the Chinese currency. The renminbi means people's currency. So ren is Mandarin for people. And so, yeah, they've all got the same meaning, which is kind of amazing because those three countries, or four countries, they don't speak the same language.
Right.
But the word yen is really a sort of anglicization of, well, actually, so we're going to get technical. It's a Portugueseization of what the currency was called in Japanese and then ended up as an English version. But it's actually much closer, the original Japanese word for it, to won. It's a wa sound, but Portuguese doesn't deal with was very well. So we ended up with a ya sounding currency instead. Yen.
Very cool.
That's very nerdy. Very, excellent. Very nerdy.
No, I like it. Any other world currencies?
So the South African rand is named after Witwatersrand or Witwatersrand. I'm not totally sure. By the sounds of it, it is an Afrikaans place name, but it's a gold mining region. So they've just taken the rand off the end of that. I really like the Bulgarian lev, right, which they don't have anymore. They got euros. It means lion.
Oh, that's cool. And okay, so like the first coins that we know of in human history had lions stamped on them too.
Ah, there you go. The Romanians also had a leu, which also meant a lion as well. And just sort of, it's kind of happenstance, but Sierra Leone's currency is called the leon. And ultimately that means
lion. I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, because the name of the country is Lion Mountains.
This is kind of cool, by the way. The Lydian Electrum coins or Lydian Lions are widely considered the first minted electric coins, dating back to like the Iron Age, I believe. Also, I think the first one we found is like 7th century BCE. They are called Electrum coins because they're made of electrum, which is a naturally occurring gold silver alloy, which, as we know from one of our earlier episodes, is named after amber because of its color.
Right.
The Greek electron and the word electric and all things related to electricity are named after amber because it was observed generating sparks when you frictioned it. But this coin.
friction the thing.
Talk about verbing nouns.
I like what you're getting into here, which is some proper sort of historical numismatics.
Yes. Yeah. There you go.
Numismatics is a word I only just learned when the YouTube algorithm served me up a channel entirely dedicated to poking old coins and collecting them and talking about them. Yeah, it's from the Greek nomisma.
The reason I know this and have for a long time is I used to be the editor of a couple of publications. I was the editor of a graphic design magazine called How, and I was the content director at Writer's Digest. And one of our sister publications, basically owned by the same media organization, had a numismatics magazine that still exists and is now in different hands. So I was friends with the editor of the numismatics magazine.
I really do see why people get into it. I watched one half an hour long video with the guy sort of fingering his Anglo-Saxon, his Roman and his Carolingian coins and thought, I want some of those because they do say so much about the culture, and particularly in Rome, right, where one of the best ways you can get a message out from Rome to everyone in this vast empire of millions of people is to print it on the currency, because that soon starts to spread around. And most of the time, most Roman subjects, citizens of Rome, would not have known who the emperor was. And it wouldn't have any impact on their life. It'd be far too far away. The only way they would know is to have a look at the coin and it would tell them who the emperor was, which I absolutely loves it as just a fact of the importance of these little things, other than just that they are currency.
I do wonder to what extent the presence of American presidents on currency has influenced the presidents that your average kid or person knows the most about. You'll sometimes run into people who think that Benjamin Franklin was a president because he is on money.
I accidentally put that in a newsletter.
Oh no!
A few weeks ago. Oh yeah, and I got hundreds of replies.
I bet you did.
Putting me right. I mean, quite rightly as well. I was just, on another day I wouldn't have put it, but on this day I really did put it in there.
Also, in your defense, Ben Franklin is objectively the coolest of the founding fathers. He was so cool.
Oh man, yeah. Mm. I got a whole thing about his attempt at alphabet reform. He's one of my faves.
He's a riot faves. And so funny and just shenanigans everywhere. He's one of my favorite historical figures.
We talked about currency. Another revelation for me in researching this is that the current of a river and something that is current, as in nowish.
Yeah, it flows.
They're the same thing. Yeah, they are things that are currently in circulation. So when we talk about currency, it literally just means something that is in circulation, that is in the current.
The first time, like, this was like years ago when I was I think I was writing my kid's book, or like prior to that, just like doing etymology tinkering, and I was like, oh, so bank must be like a riverbank, and it's not.
it is too convenient an association, isn't it? So when people talk about a word having currency, it means the same as, a coin that is in
it
currency
flows.
It's in circulation. It is a word that its usage is current. And that was a big deal for me. Also, I looked up the word fiat. I don't know how widely people are aware of this sort of term, fiat currency. It's particularly relevant now when we've got cryptocurrency. What we're talking about so far in terms of currency names, they're all what you would call fiat currency. They're currencies that are usually overseen by a central bank. They're somehow sanctioned. And actually the word fiat is the Latin for let it be done. But in practicality, it means something that is officially sanctioned. And actually that fiat is related to facere, which we've talked about before, which means to make or to do, which gives the French faire and the Italian fare.
I mentioned bank and I told you what it doesn't mean, but but bank is from the Italian bench, and the notion is these are the benches at which money lenders sat, because there was handling money throughout certain points in especially European and Western culture has been kind of frowned upon. There's also the word bankrupt means a broken bench, and it's probably figurative, but you'll also see people saying that it's because if you were like did a bad deal or didn't pay your debts, then your bench would be publicly smashed, which more likely maybe. Figuratively.
Yeah, exactly. But you weren't so wrong then when you equated the bank with the riverbank.
Because they are the same word.
They are the same word.
It does also. Yeah. They are. It just, the currency does not connect to bank because it is
riverbank. It's flowing past it and through it. Yeah, and bench and bank are the same word as well, etymologically speaking.
Retail has kind of a cool origin. I know this is like, it's a little bit, I don't know, it's related. Retail means like the selling a cut of something, basically. It's related to the word tally, which was a cut stick that you would cut grooves into. The lender would have their version of it, and then the borrower would have their version of it, and they would match, and it would be a symbol of owed money, basically debts and payments. You'll know more about this than I do, but in 1834, tally sticks ended up causing quite a disastrous fire and destroyed the Palace of Westminster because they were trying to get rid of a bunch of, like, we had stopped using the tally system, unfortunately, relatively recently, like early 1820s or something, and needed to get rid of all these, like, useless, meaningless tally sticks that were stored there, and a blaze got out of control.
I did not know about that, actually.
Oh, really?
Fascinating stuff.
Yeah. The idea was that they were like fraud resistant because it was a physical stick with like physical grooves in it that were hard to replicate.
Well, I do have a tally fact, and I'm doing air quotes because it's not a fact, it's a conjecture. But if the French hadn't given us the word number, we would probably be using the word tally
yeah.
for number. Mm-hmm. It's cognate, as people like to say in the business. It's directly related to the German word for number, Zahl.
I've loosely addressed this, but it means to cut, and it's related to words like tailor.
In retail, there is tailoring.
Yes. Retail implies the re in that implies cutting a segment of something. So you're selling, when you sell retail, you are selling a smaller cut of something, a smaller amount of it than you would for wholesale.
Oh, so that does directly contrast it with the phrase wholesale.
Yeah.
Now that is just like made a connection in my brain that is not going to go away. So yeah, retail, wholesale. One is selling the whole, the other is selling the parts. That's great.
That's very fun. I've worked in B2B media for so long that I feel like I played around with these words while I was running parts of like Commerce Week and things like that.
I should have a load of these in my back pocket because I was a business reporter here in Germany for a very long time. You can go down the finance route, and I'm sure there's plenty of interesting etymologies in there, but really it's the stuff that people hold in their hands that I think is just the most fun.
I think so too.
Fun to talk about.
Should we briefly talk about, just mention the origin of the word finance?
Oh yeah, do it.
It means end. It's fini, you know? It's the Latin fini, same with finite and everything else. The notion that a payment that settled a debt was the original sense of finance, from the concept of like finalizing accounts that came from the realm of finance, encompassing management and investment and money planning.
This reminds me a little bit of the origin of mortgage, which I think we might have talked about before, which is a mortgage, which is a death payment, but it's not referring to the death of anyone involved. It's referring to the death of the deal on the payment. So either the payment doesn't get made and the deal dies, or the full payment, because originally a mortgage you would just pay it all at once, is made, and essentially, yeah, the agreement dies. The agreement is finito.
Yeah, it's funny to say that like your mortgage is this death pledge that's like something you take on until you die, but that's not, unfortunately, that's not the case.
Yeah, it's sort of a half-remembered explanation of it is that, yeah, you're signing a death pledge, which you sort of are, but not in the way that you should be frightened of.
More in the like, oh, darn dad humor kind of way.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sitting here in Germany. I haven't talked about the mark.
Oh, yeah. Well, we have to do that.
We do. The Deutschmark was the currency in Germany before. The euro, you might have heard of the Reichsmark as well. They had marks all down the centuries. And the word mark is just a really, really old Germanic word. And it is directly related to the English word mark, because the original marks were cut from an ingot that had been stamped, that had been marked. Voila. So that's how you end up with mark, originally being a weight, so the weight of that ingot, and eventually the the weight of the currency. You see how you got the same story. Isn't it amazing how, in all these different cultures and languages, you have this sort of same progression from, because we talked about the word talent in our episode about the Bible.
That one blew my mind.
Yeah, that is amazing. So a talent was originally a weight. And well, not originally, but let's skip that bit, was originally a weight, then it was a coin, and then there is a parable that involves rightly or wrongly investing your talents, from which we get the idea of someone being talented.
It all comes down to like the tactile feel of interacting with these things, which, I mean, we've also addressed with the word check, which we've addressed a bunch, so I don't want to belabor the point, but every notion of the word check is from the game of chess, and all of it comes down to like a checked board being used for accounting.
I'll throw one more currency your way. We mentioned the symbol for it, but didn't actually say what it meant, but while you're talking about, you know, how things feel, the word rupee is actually from Sanskrit, rupiah, which means a shaped thing.
Ooh, very nice. Yeah,
but I mean, as promised at the start, vagueness aplenty when it comes to the names of coins.
I think it's fun to talk about the word nickel, which I think we addressed in other contexts to a degree, but nickel is from the German Kupfernickel, meaning copper goblin, the notion being that nickel is this coppered colored ore that yields no copper. So, yeah. And it's less valuable than copper. So, you know, if you find it, it's this nasty little thing that lives in the mines and makes you do all the work for it to get it. And then it ends up being less valuable.
So why is the coin called a nickel? Is it as obvious as it sounds?
The US needed durable coins during and post Civil War made from base metals and that weren't very expensive, and nickel filled the void. A lot of this came down to Joseph Wharton, who had nickel mines in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and he was an industrialist, and he lobbied aggressively to make the nickel a coin, basically.
Right.
It meant just not just the metal itself, but also then the 5 cent coin after that.
Yes, it's 5 cents.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then before the nickel, the US had the half dime, which was a tiny silver coin with silver in it. And supposedly the first one of these was struck in 1792 with the silver donated by George Washington himself, which is pretty interesting.
No way. Yeah, mm-hmm. Oh, that's fun.
Silver coins started being like hoarded, and that was a problem. Yeah.
So that was a half dime.
Mm-hmm.
Where does the word dime come from then?
So dime means tenth. That's pretty simple. It's from the old French dîme, which we have a modern French word for as well. And ultimately from the medieval Latin decima pars, a tenth part of something. It also is the same root ultimately as the word tithe, a tenth owed to the church, and decimal.
Oh, wow.
So the dime was one of the original denominations authorized by the Coinage Act of 1792. But at the time it was pronounced, or it was spelled D-I-S-M-E. It was pronounced to rhyme with team. So it was a dime, just like the French term.
I see.
So that's pretty cool.
That's nice. Well, it's nice that in those names of coins, you've got a little bit of German going on, you've got a little bit of French going on,
everywhere.
You've got a little bit of English going on with a quarter or whatever, which is kind of a good reflection of, I suppose, the European influence in America.
All kinds of fun history, lots of politics involved. Oh, one more fun thing about the quarter, which that's a pretty obvious origin, like that should be pretty obvious to anybody, but the term quarter actually for a coin dates back to Middle English, because a farthing was sometimes called a quarter in Middle English. And then the Latin quadrans was a Roman coin worth 1/4 of an ass.
It's kind of weird to have a quarter coin, you know, in a decimal system, to have a coin for,
right, I know, for 25.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not round enough.
I think it's because, like, you know, you can do half or a half of a half.
Yeah, exactly. But
that logics to me a little bit. But one of the things that I wanted to mention about the quarter as it stands today, in 1965, when silver prices were rising, the quarter was replaced with a copper nickel clad composition that had two layers of 75% copper, 25% nickel, with a pure copper core in the middle, like an Oreo. And because it happened during LBJ's presidency and under his reforms, it is called the Johnson sandwich.
No.
Yeah. So the the quarter as we know it today is called the Johnson sandwich.
I am not offering anyone a Johnson sandwich. I don't care how much they
mean, LBJ. LBJ would think that joke was hilarious. So
okay, good. Yeah, I suppose his initials are quite funny as well.
Mm. Oh, and he loved it. It's still pretty expensive to produce quarters. I want to say, as I looked this up, so if it's more updated since then, maybe that's changed. But in 2011, it cost 11.14 cents to produce each quarter.
Yeah, it'd be dreadful if it cost more to produce than it was worth.
Well, that's happened before, which is why we've resorted to things like nickel to make them.
There are two very different types of coin historically, aren't there? They're the ones that, you know, their value is directly related to their weight, and that's why so many of them are named after weight. And then there's this, I suppose, the more sort of symbolic currency. Like you think about a note. A note is essentially a promise, right? It's not, and it is money, but at the same time, what it really is I think, is it British notes that it says, I promise to bear the holder of this note £10, for example, signed by the governor of the Bank of England. You know, it's a promise of the money that the note represents, but it's not the money itself. If we're going to be pedantic about it, I think we do like to be pedantic sometimes, so why not?
Oh, of course. At least a little bit. I mean, we can make fun of pedants while also being a little pedantic ourselves.
We can. You know what I didn't mention while we were talking about dollars is the fact that I'm wearing a dollar sign.
Yeah, look at that.
In my very nifty Words Unraveled. What
the bleep is a Grolix?
Yeah, well, exactly. So if you don't know, a Grolix is this here, this collection of symbols, which includes a dollar sign and what you in the States, I think, would call a pound sign.
Mm-hmm.
Although these days, maybe more likely a hash or something.
Yeah, I do wonder if like more, I mean, I would call that a pound sign, but I don't think that anyone born after me would.
Well, I think a lot of people would call it a hashtag now, which I've always found kind of annoying. It's only a hashtag if it's got something written after it. It's a tag with a hash at the start of it. It's got, there are loads of different names actually for that symbol, the one that looks like a noughts and crosses. Oh, you call it noughts and crosses in American?
We don't. But
what do you call that game?
Oh, tic-tac-toe.
Tic-tac-toe. Okay.
We're talking about the same thing, right?
Yeah, we are. Like yeah, you're right. X's it is. And O's. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. X's and O's. Yeah, we call it noughts and crosses, which actually sounds incredibly British when I say that. Anyway, this t-shirt available in our shop, as are many other great designs that have been selling remarkably well. Join the latest fashion trend, which is some wordy, nerdy merch.
If you want to check out like why Grolix means that, we've got an earlier episode on, what was it about? That was our swearing episode, I think.
No, it wasn't. Was it?
It's one of our earlier episodes. Go listen to all of them.
Find listen it. To all.
Scavenger hunt activate.
Or we'll work out which one it is and we'll leave a link below. Yeah. One or the other. But I think that about wraps us up for this. Yeah. Let's call it money-centric episode.
This was money and time well spent.
Very good, Jess. I really enjoyed this one, particularly going through all of those names, the currencies and the old coins that you told us about, as well a few revelations in there that I am not going to forget. Thanks, Jess, and thanks to you for watching/listening.
See you next week.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.